The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
New book just out. Esther Is Now Following You by Tanya Sweeney. And it is new in two ways, in that it is not only the new book by Tanya Sweeney, it is the first book by Tanya Sweeney. And reviews just in, it is going down a storm.
Yeah, it is. Thank God.
That must be nice.
From their mouth to God's ear. No, it's been brilliant so far. The whole thing has been great.
We will get to the topic of the book because you've chosen an unusual angle to give your protagonist, because it's not a characteristic that is immediately viewed as positive, which is how we tend to write our protagonist. But how long has this been bubbling within?
Do you know what? This has been sort of decades in the making for me, because in my early 20s, I used to work in the music industry in London. And so I used to, you know, meet a lot of pop stars, obviously, and, you know, trailing behind them would obviously be their fans, you know, or a bunch of teenage girls who would be loving, you know, ex-boy band or, you know, the Spice Girls or whatever. And I was always really curious. I was like, how did they even know we were here? I only found out half an hour ago we were coming to this photo call. How do they know? This is the pre-internet era. I know I look, you know, 25, but this was pre...
That, Tanya, let's be clear.
I'm 25 plus that, okay? But this was the 90s, right? And, you know, this was the pre-social media age, pre-Google age. So I was always kind of like, God, the cunning on these people is... kind of mind-blowing.
Well, I used
know?
To remember the same thing when you would, because there was a lot of radio stations in this one building, and you would arrive in one morning, and like that, there'd be 20, 30 young ones outside the front door. You're thinking, what's going on inside? They knew who guests were on shows on a radio station that I was on before I did. You're thinking, how did they get that data?
Exactly. And this is why Esther is one of these women who is like, you know, Magnum PI, knocking around the internet trying to look for this guy that she has a massive crush on. And I love, again, that's exactly the germ of it. I was like, these people are sort of incredible. Put teenage girls in charge of the country, because they would, you know, put MI5 in the halfpenny place, frankly. And, you know, and Esther is incredibly tenacious. She's very detail oriented. She's running around the internet after this actor, Canadian actor, that she has a crush on and has an imaginary relationship with in her own head. And, you know, so
but these are not attractive characteristics. It's a gutsy move. Now, it works out very well in the book, but it's a gutsy move to say, I'm effectively going to write from the perspective of a stalker.
I know. And I loved the idea of writing, because, you know, you're obviously hearing her side of things. So it reads a bit like a love story, or it reads like, you know, she is a romantic heroine in her mind.
Unrequited, albeit.
Oh, well, very much unrequited. I mean, the man does not know she lives and breathes, you know, that kind of way. But yeah, it's so interesting because, you know, everyone else that reads this wants to give her head an almighty wobble, because she is deluded in ways that we can barely, a regular person can barely fathom, you know. She's so unboundaried. She's so morally wrong. We know this. And you see, the other thing about this book as well, Anton, is it's set in 2011, right? The conversation around parasocial relationships and stalking was not the way it is now. So, and do you remember Facebook and Twitter was sort of a bit of a wild west? We were just friending every cat, dog and devil.
And there was actual live celebrities actually talking to real live people on it at one point.
Exactly. Yeah, there was not the chasm between celebrities and regular people that there is now. They were all, for about a year, we were all on a regular playing field, and we were friends with, like, you know, I could well be your Facebook friend, who knows, like, but there was definitely the outside possibility that you could, you know, tweet Harry Styles and he might quote retweet you or write back or whatever. So, you know, that's why it's specifically set in this era. Where
Stephen Fry talking about Mattress Mick at one point, I recall. That for me was the apogee of the whole thing. It was like, how do we end up here?
Times. I mean, they were great times to be living through.
But
they
go really back. Are. You said this, the germ of this began with you working in the record industry in London. That was a while ago. So what caused the germination of that germ to mix biology?
Well, obviously I became a journalist after I left the music industry, and
But was it gnawing at you within? Did you want to get this book written?
I kind of did and I didn't. I had written a screenplay in the early noughties about a woman who has a syndrome called de Clairembault syndrome, right? Which is a stalker syndrome. It's also called erotomania, which is a very sexy sounding thing. But what it is, right, is you could be watching, we'll say, ER, and George Clooney is going, get me 4 pints of O negative stat. But what you hear as someone with de Clairembault syndrome is, Tanya, I love you. I'm in love with you. And you think that George Clooney is sending you subliminal messages through ER about you, Do you know that kind of way? This is a real thing. I never made this up. So I was always so fascinated in the psychological sort of aspect of how does a person get from just living a regular life, going to work, having a husband as Esther does, and then really believing that you are the almost not secret girlfriend, but that you're the soulmate of a Canadian actor that has had
never
nothing to do with you. Yeah. It's wild. I had the best time writing this book, I have to say.
Well, this is what intrigues me is how you did the research, because I would have thought typing into Google, how do I best stalk somebody through the internet, causes police to come to your door.
Do you know what I did, which was kind of fascinating?
Stalk somebody. Please tell me you stalked somebody.
Oh, I wish I had. I mean, listen, Anton, I love having a celebrity crush, right? They are so diverting and distracting. And the best thing about them is the person is madly in love with you back, right? In your imaginary relationship. It can go no wrong. But what I did, right, was I spent a bit of time online in various fan spaces. So I would find, and I wanted to find kind of like C-list, D-list actors and musicians that you wouldn't think would have very huge fan bases, but they actually do. And because, well, say it's an actor, I can't even think of anyone off the top of my head, but I think these people think that they're vaguely gettable and approachable, more so than Harry Styles would be, say. So I kind of hung around, lurked,
but,
you know.
Sorry to cut across. Is that because to some extent they are? I've done shows where a text will come in for a C-lister or a D-lister and you'll read the text and they will say, oh yeah, that's Helen. You know, they know some of them. You get the sense if you've engaged here, you've had some, intimate relationship, but there is more access than there is at the higher level.
I completely agree. And, you know, I think we're in a really interesting point of time where we think that celebrities are like our buddies because we've seen inside their kitchen and we know where they're going to be next Tuesday. And I mean, fans right now are so media literate and social media literate. They could, if you said to them, find Harry Styles for me now, they would pin him down to the nearest square inch in 5 minutes flat. They are incredible. They just know how to work the system.
Cut across. You said you were on these fan groups for C and D listeners. What did you find?
I was in these sort of fan spaces, and you would find a bunch of people who, say, for instance, if you know, somebody was to put out a new show or put out a new single, there would be much activity and a lot of chat about how fantastic they are as an artist and as a visionary and as a person and all that. And I started to realise that these people are getting something incredible out of being in this group. You know, maybe life is hard in ways that we don't know about, but they love being part of this little online slumber party. And there's obviously one or two that were the original kind of fan zero who were there from when they were, you know, we'll say Paul Mescal, right? Were there when he was doing the, you know, Trinity College plays, you know, and they consider themselves to be the absolute authority on this person. And they are the sort of queen bee of this group, you know. So I found the interaction between them all just so fascinating. And in this book, you know, Esther falls in with a gang called the Tedettes, who are obviously mad about Ted Levy. And we see a little bit about, you know, most of them are teenage girls and they're all, you know, in far-flung pockets of the universe. But then you start to unpeel them a little bit and they're damaged and they have sad lives and they get so much out of being in this group online. And I do believe this is something that's happening in online culture in a wider sense.
Well, this goes to you being, to creating Esther so sympathetically. Do you feel an empathy towards them? Do you?
Yeah, I 100% do. And I actually...
You don't want to, as you say, give their head a wobble. You don't want to do a thing of, lads, come on, get out the real world.
But I think I understand that, you know, if you do what Esther does in this book, you know, you are wanting to escape a reality or you are wanting to put your head somewhere that's safe for you, I think. Now, listen, we understand as well that in terms of stalking, you know, like on the other really extreme end of stalking, it is about power. It is an abuse, you know, it is a criminal behaviour. But I feel an awful lot of empathy for my Esther anyway, you know, and we start to understand as the book goes on, you know, we look a little more into her background, we understand how she's vulnerable and why she did what she did.
It taps into something, I think it taps into something in that seems to be in the modern psyche, beyond even just relationships, in the same way that she thinks she has a relationship with somebody who's never met, there's a sort of a sense you get with people now where if I monitor the news closely enough, I am influencing it. do you know, there's that sense of politicians by symbiosis will know how much I'm paying attention to this.
Yeah, people
we all
very,
get obsessed by it.
Yeah, there's no such thing as being a passive consumer of media anymore. You know, everyone has an opinion and they're not shy in bringing them forth, you know. No, I totally agree with that. And it, I think it makes it more dynamic and it's definitely shifted the landscape.
Hugely. Very easy to go down the rabbit hole, though. Very easy to get completely lost in, excuse me, I'm off on the phone now to find out, to do my research, to pay attention to my little personal thing.
And people are so curious. I mean, I don't think there's a person alive right now, right, who will catch feelings for somebody, right, and then go and sit back and go, oh, they're very nice. Oh, I wonder what they're like. No, you're straight onto Facebook. You're straight onto Instagram. Then the next thing you see, they have an ex-girlfriend. You're on her Facebook. And then you're looking through her photo albums. And the next thing you find yourself on the photo, you know, wedding photos of people you've never met and never will. I mean, we'll go as far down the rabbit hole as you'll allow people, especially me. Like, I am so nosy and curious. And if I fancy someone, I have got, I mean, I have them profiled to, you know, I mean, I'm married now, so I don't do it anymore. Uh-huh. Just FYI, right?
Uh-huh.
But I mean,
twice now you refer to having celebrity crushes. Pre-marriage, who was it? Who was the person that you hunted through Bebo?
Well, do you know who I had a major crush on at one point? Joaquin Phoenix, because I met him. I was at the Screen Actors Guild Awards, right? Long story is how I ended up there, little old me. But I ended up finagling my way into the smoking area where all the celebrities were, right? Don't know how I got in.
Of the Screen Actors Guild Award in Hollywood.
Yeah, I was in the sort of backstage area. It's a very long story. That's another item. We'll do that one again. But I got in anyway. And I have to also say, I was wearing a top from Topshop and New Balance trainers to this award ceremony.
Well, you're well ahead of the trend with the New Balance. They're the thing.
Incredibly well. That's me all over. But I was, and I had this like scrunched, you know, I had all this mousse in my hair. So I looked a fright, okay? So I'd say Joaquin Phoenix came in and went, who's your one? And he looked at me with those beautiful eyes. And of course I did a, who me? And our eyes met. And when I say I had to go home, I had to excuse myself from the Screen Actors Guild Awards and have a moment to myself. And I was like, oh my God, well, we're obviously in love because the way he looked at me. Now, this was 2001, so there wasn't much going around online about Joaquin Phoenix at the time. I found out he was a Scorpio and a vegan. And I held on to those two details like they were shimmering jewels. And
what does the overlap of that Venn diagram mean? What are the characteristics of being both vegan and a Scorpio?
Absolutely. You wouldn't be able to order lobster in front of him, basically, I think. But yes. And then, of course, I did a big deep dive into what Scorpios were like. Sure, listen, MI5 had nothing on me. I was, you know, there was journalism in my blood from the get-go. And I remember taking that crush and you know, finding those tiny little scrabbles of information and just being like, Joaquin Phoenix.
See, my this is why journalism is the perfect career. Because once you put it within that category, it's fine. It's professional interest.
Stalk everyone every 2 days, yeah.
Now, I mentioned this being your debut novel. Mm. The reviews have been superb. It's getting a great response. How much of a relief is that? Because it has to be like having a first child. When you put this into the world, there's a lot of pressure and fear and trepidation, I assume.
It's very vulnerable because obviously I publish columns every, you know, week and people will respond occasionally to those and, you know, you will get told in no uncertain terms that it is, people don't agree with you.
But that's good. Then, you know, they're reading it.
Well, that's true.
You know, you're not responsible for newspaper sales. You're responsible for response. If they're hacked off, mighty.
This is a good spin. I like it.
Thanks. Whereas with the book, it's all on you.
Well, you've created a universe out of nowhere, which was really cringy to work on, you know, but and there is something vulnerable about the crevices of your imagination being put into 300 pages and being put out there. And definitely when it went out originally, I was completely and utterly terrified. And it's gotten a little bit easier. I think I had a major anxiety attack about a week ago and I was like, I wonder, can I actually stop all of this from happening? You know, then I was like, no, I need the money. So keep going. Keep that press going. Yeah, no problem.
Now, the press has said very positive things. Do you pay attention?
I was told not to.
Yeah.
I was told not to. And I tend to not. I mean, I'm...
How can you not? How can you not be Googling it on a daily basis going, how's this going? Is it working? Do people like it?
Well, every so often I'll get an email from a publicist saying, you know, this is what someone's saying about it. But I think if you've been in journalism, you might know this as well, Anton. Like, you never read below the line. That's been the hard and fast rule for me. Like, to never, ever look at what anyone is saying about what I'm writing because I think that way madness lies, you know, if you start...
Oh, I like to dwell on it until I get really, really hacked off and then dream about going around to their house and saying, come here, you. Might have said that to my face.
Could you imagine? Yeah, no, I think I just went, you know what, I'm not even... You know, if a piece goes up on Facebook and there's obviously a lot of people, I'm just like, no, we are not going to look at any of that. So, you know, and I was told the same about Goodreads reviews. Do not go there. Just, you know, let people have their, you know, relationship with this book or whatever they want to say about it. It's really not on you. It's not a you problem. You just concentrate on book two or book three.
Well, this is the area that I wanted to ask you about. Once you get the kind of reviews that you are getting, normally the publisher goes, so what's your thoughts on book two and book three? Are you busily typing already?
Well, I was told that book two would be an incredibly tough book to do. There's the difficult second book syndrome. I already have a first draft written, which is great. Oh, I do. Yeah, no problem to me. And you see, look, when you're a journalist, you know yourself that the writing muscle is very, very taut. And it's just, you know, we don't look at a blank page in the way that another person might. We just know that you have 1,000 words to do and you're just going to get on and do them. And if they're crap, so be it, you know. So I have no idea if this first draft of book two is any good at all, but it's done. And, you know, I think in terms of fiction, it's the sculptor's equivalent of going to the shop and buying the clay. So I have bought the clay and it's now a question of, you know,
and are you, to use that movie term, are you continuing within the same universe or is this a total departure?
No, it's a departure. I mean, I suppose what I can say about it, and it's something that really interests me, is how online communities might influence offline behaviour. You know, so that's, it's a bit obtuse to say that, but I can't go any more detail than that. But I'm so fascinated in the way we, you know, kind of mediate ourselves online and then how that kind of comes back out into the real world, you know. And I also love writing about women in their mid-30s because I think it's such a crazy time for women. There's a biological clock, there's just existential crises. We were all told that by 35 we'd have the career, the money, the body, and half of us are still living in our parents' box rooms going, hang on, I was promised jetpacks. What is this? You know?
Why am I still in the New Balance and the Topshop top?
And putting moose in my hair. Exactly.
Tanya, undoubtedly the second book, I won't jinx you, hopefully the second book will have the same success as the first, because the first is playing an absolute stormer. It is entitled Esther Is Now Following You, and it is by Tanya Sweeney. Tanya, thank you again.
Thank you.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.